Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Mohammed Mirandi. We want to talk about what's going on in the Middle East and especially the ongoing nuclear talks that are taking place in Geneva. Mohammed, before we get into that, I just want to say a brief word about today. It's a very important day. Today is the 50th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And anyone old enough, like myself, remembers the day vividly. Indeed, I do remember that day. I know exactly where I was and what I was doing when we got the news. It was on a Friday. It was during the lunch break. Everything just stopped. Everything just stopped, as you can imagine. Presidents don't get assassinated, I would say, anywhere. On a regular basis, anywhere in the world. Kennedy's assassination certainly wasn't the first one in America. It was the last one. I hope it will be the last one. Kennedy and Lincoln were the two most famous assassinations, but presidents do get assassinated. And the true story of the Kennedy assassination has yet to come out in full. But there's overwhelming evidence, absolutely overwhelming, that Lee Harvey Oswald had nothing to do with it. He was set up. He was a convenient patsy. This is the way the system works. Well, the same thing was true with Bobby Kennedy. Sirhan had nothing to do with it. Martin Luther King, James Earl Ray had nothing to do with it. Again, overwhelming evidence absolutely absolves them. But you'd never know it from the official story. And in America, today we're seeing all kinds of stories about the assassination through the mainstream media, and of course they're relating everything but what readers and viewers need to know. The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Kennedy's assassination was a state-sponsored job. There's no question about it. I wrote about Kennedy a few times. I put out an article yesterday. I called it Remembering Jack Kennedy. There were lots of reasons why the establishment wanted to get rid of him. The biggest one in my mind was that he wanted to end U.S. involvement in Southeast Asia. Excuse me, I've got a raspy throat. He wanted the troops out. He issued an order of sorts just weeks before his assassination, saying he wanted 1,000 U.S. forces out. There were small numbers there at that time in 1963. He wanted 1,000 out. These are advisors, other military-related personnel, mostly unrelated to the war situation going on that was at a low level at that point, mainly between the North and the South. He wanted 1,000 U.S. forces out by the end of the year. He wanted them all out by the end of 1965. Well, that was a no-no in terms of the establishment because it wanted a war. The war profiteers gained so much from U.S. wars. They wanted a war. There are suggestions that Lyndon Johnson and George Herbert Walker Bush were very much involved in getting rid of Kennedy. Maybe there'll be more information coming out on that in the future. I would have no doubt whatever that that was the case because Lyndon Johnson, in short order, quickly reversed the most important things that Kennedy had put in place, including the Vietnam situation. And we had the Gulf of Tonkin incident. We had 10 years of U.S. involvement in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia. Oh, 550,000 U.S. forces were there. 50,000 were killed. Many others were harmed. We literally poisoned the Vietnamese landscape with Agent Orange and so on. And to this day, the war ended in April 1975, America's involvement. From that day to today, we're getting 28 years almost, 27 and a half years. The Vietnamese have yet to come back from that horrible conflict. We could go on and on about that. Maybe we'll at another time, but we certainly want to avoid another one, and that would be any confrontation that could be belligerent with Iran, and we have these nuclear talks going on. Mohammed, let me let you jump in and talk about your view on those talks. I honestly am not optimistic, but I'd like to hear your point of view.
Well, it's difficult at this stage to conclusion about the end game with regards to talk. I think, though, that so far the signs have not been positive in the sense that a couple of weeks ago when the first round of talk began, there was a great deal of optimism, whether justified or not, And the reason was because negotiated a partial, well, they had negotiated a number of issues, and they felt that they had made 90% progress on a draft agreement. But then, of course, the French foreign minister, when he entered the talks, both before the talks, he made some very negative statements. In the talks, he completely rewrote the text. And despite the fact that the Iranians and Americans had already agreed on a number of key issues. And then, of course, after the talks, he also made a number of other comments that were not helpful at all. But the fact that the Americans were so easily convinced by the French to disregard their agreement and or their agreements with Iran, I think was a sign of, from the Iranian perspective, of bad faith on behalf of the Americans. Then, since hundreds of reporters were there, everyone knew what had happened and that it was the French foreign minister who entered the talks that caused disruption. Whether it was that it was a good cop, bad cop combination, or the French were acting on their own under the influence of the Saudi regime and the Israelis, that's a different debate. But the point really here is that the Iranians felt that the Americans were unreliable, to say the least, because of their sudden shift in the position after the agreement on most of the text. And then, while everyone knew what had happened, Secretary of State Kerry went to the United Arab Emirates and basically blamed Iran for the failure in the talks and said that there was an agreement between the 5+1, but that the Iranians didn't accept. And everyone knew that was false. So Kerry was also being very dishonest. So not only was the United States unreliable, but also the United States was lying, the government of the United States and its representative. So this made the Iranians much more suspicious. The irony of it, of course, is that the chief U.S. negotiator, Wendy Sherman, in a statement in front of the Senate, in front of the Foreign Affairs Committee, basically implied that the DNA of Iranians, that in reality, when we see the events on the ground, we saw that constellation of claims made by Sherman, which were, from the Iranian perspective, racist, and if they had been said about the minority in the United States, he would have quickly lost his job. But in any case, the United States and the U.S. government felt not only dishonest, but unreliable as well in the negotiations. So because of that, I think that episode a couple of weeks ago makes this round of negotiations even more complicated, because the Iranians are going to be more wary any initial agreements or anything that the United States or Western countries in the 5+1, anything that they say.
Mohammed, I think Iran knows as well as any other country, maybe better than most any other country, that America is totally duplicitous in the way it does business, including the way it negotiates. I mean, 32 years of anti-Iranian sentiment coming out of America since the 1979 revolution. I mean, Iran really hasn't had a moment of peace during all that time, where they've been maliciously targeted for the wrong reasons. As far as these nuclear talks going on, annually 16 U.S. intelligence agencies come out with a report on the potential world threats and so on, and Iran is certainly featured in that report. And every year, I've only commented on the most recent ones, and I think the most recent one was last March. But in recent years, the report has said about Iran's nuclear program, there is no evidence to show it has a military component. Those are my words, not the report's words. And there's another tagline to the effect that we don't know that there is, that there may not be one. We simply can't find any evidence to show that there is one. Well, if 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, with all their capabilities, satellites and on-the-ground spies and the rest of it, if they can't detect any military component to Iran's nuclear program, there is none. There is none. So what on earth are these nuclear talks all about? Well, to me, it's just red herring cover to really cover up for America's real agenda. America simply doesn't tolerate sovereign independent countries. It wants pro-Western puppet states replacing them. And I think that's the issue with Iran. I think that was the issue with Afghanistan, with Iraq, with Libya, what's going on in Syria now. I mean, these were all Washington's wars, and I think the situation with Iran is also dominated by Washington. I think Washington is calling the shots. France may have played bad cop on the 9th of November, Mohammed, but I don't think France absolutely would have dared do it unless it got the go-ahead from Washington. And John Kerry kind of changed his tone along the way, so he kind of went along with this. You know what these people say publicly. You don't know what they say privately when they're talking with each other and cooking up their dirty deals. But I'm honestly not optimistic. And if anything does come from this round, I still feel very strongly that long-term U.S. anti-Iranian sentiment will continue. And unless that can be resolved, I don't see much that Iran is gaining from any resolution, and it's possible something will come out of these talks, but it simply won't be enough.
Well, a number of things, really. One is that even if there is an agreement during these talks, it will be a very minor agreement. The main issue remains to be unresolved. I think that compared to the 5% of the whole problem. But of course, as you rightly pointed out, and the United States knows that Iran's nuclear program is peaceful. The very fact that, as you rightly said, the very fact that 16 intelligence agencies in the United States repeatedly state that there's no evidence that Iran's nuclear program has a nuclear component, it itself more than enough. How the capabilities of the United States in spying, when the United States spies on its best friends, the chancellor of the company, the president of Brazil and the president of Mexico, then it does show the capabilities of the United States in spying. The United States government may be ineffective in almost everything else these days, but when it comes to spying, they seem to be quite good at it. So the Iranians recognize that the United States doesn't have any evidence and that the problem is not really the nuclear program, but that the nuclear program is being used to make ordinary Iranians suffer, to put pressure on the Iranian government, because the United States fails to recognize Iran as an independent and sovereign state. One other point that I think should be mentioned is that the United States in all this has, I think, to recognize, and this is something that may actually help at some point, maybe days from now, maybe months from now, maybe years from now, maybe decades from now. But the United States government has to come to this recognition that the days when it was a lone superpower are quickly coming to an end. And the United States is losing credibility across the globe because of its spying, even on its closest friends. It's losing credibility to the next crisis in Europe and the United States, which it simply cannot, and it has failed to resolve. It is losing credibility because the whole North African West Asia is growing more and more unstable by the day. And it's losing credibility because rivals are on the rise, rivals such as China. Yet the United States continues to pursue unproductive policies against Iran in this region, whereas Iran could potentially be a friendly country to the United States, and that would make it unnecessary for the United States to put so much resources in basically waging a constant war against the Iranian people. The United
Oh dear, are we cut off?
Salafism, and yet they fail to recognize that they need a better relationship with a country like Iran, which has never attacked any country in the world, but and which has always been peaceful.
I hope you're still there, Mohammed. I absolutely agree with you. And at the same time, you made an important point at the beginning of this comment, the fact that that if an agreement is reached in Geneva, it would be very, very limited. It would be temporary. It would be reversible. And my sense, because no official information has come out, just some leaked information, my sense is that big demands are made from Iran and very little is being offered in return. And they can literally be reversed in a blink of the eye if Washington so decides it wants to do that. And I agree with you that wouldn't it make more sense? I mean, if we had sensible people running America, which unfortunately we don't, and in my lifetime there haven't been too many sensible people around. The lunatics run the American asylum. They certainly do for the most part. But if we had sensible people running America, I would say somebody like John Kennedy. Certainly he would not want to. He wanted to get out of Southeast Asia. He wanted no part of a conflict there. He wanted Palestinians to be liberated. He respected Palestinians' rights. He wanted Israel's nuclear program to be dismantled. These were the kind of things that he stood for. Well, no American leader since him has come out for these kinds of policy. He was very public about it. He wanted the CIA shredded into a million pieces and scattered to the wind. That was roughly the words that he used. You can see all the reasons why they wanted to get rid of him. It's too bad we don't have somebody like that around today who could stay alive long enough to implement policies, because he could be very strong in what he said he wanted to do. He would give instructions to people who worked for him and make no bones about what he wanted and wanted them to implement them. So I would think that we would have normalized relations with Iran and with other countries. We would avoid all of these Middle East wars if we had a Jack Kennedy around to be leading us. But, of course, we didn't. We had one warrior president after another. But it would make sense. Iran is a very important country, and it concerns me greatly, aside from the millions of Iranians that are being harmed by America and certainly would be so gravely harmed by war, Mohammed. What concerns me is, if heaven forbid there is a war against Iran, and America has had war plans ready for years, at least going back to the 1990s, maybe earlier than that, if there ever was a war with Iran, the chances of it spreading, it would be a regional war, and the chances of it spreading beyond the region would be very great. And I've said it on this program before, if that happens, we're talking about a global war, and a global war has a name, and it's called World War III. We had World War I and World War II. Is it inconceivable that we could have World War III? The problem is, we only had nuclear weapons at the end of World War II when the war was already won, and the weapons were used gratuitously. The Japanese were trying to surrender months before Truman dropped two bombs gratuitously and killed hundreds of thousands of people. And I think the devastation, the harm that those bombs caused are still reverberating in Japan today. Certainly, I mean, there were people harmed by nuclear radiation and their offspring and so on. But just imagine today with the kind of weapons there are in the delivery system. There were no ICBMs back in 1945. They had to drop the bombs from an aircraft. I mean, that's inconceivable today. But the possibility that there could be a nuclear war should scare anybody, because if there ever is a nuclear war, and if it ever involved other nuclear powers, we literally could be seeing humanity threatened. And smarter people than me, who really understand this issue very well, have written very eloquently about it, and they're terrified about the possibility. And because of the people who lead America and the crazies in the Congress from both parties, anybody who thinks the Democrats are good guys and Republicans are bad guys, they simply don't know the facts. the majority of them are bad guys, and the majority of them are war hawks. When they vote on Iran, the votes are overwhelming, absolutely overwhelming. The latest round of sanctions that passed in the House, that will be considered in the Senate, the latest in the House passed in July, the vote was 400-20. 400-20 to impose more harsh sanctions on top of previous ones. And now the Senate will take up this measure, and the word from the Senate is if there isn't something out of Geneva that Washington likes, they're going to come down hard on Iran. There's a holiday recess coming up, and the Senate will be back in early December. They may have gone out yesterday or today, not certain of the exact day, but they'll be out for a period of days, then they'll come back. And if nothing is to their liking out of Geneva, they're going to vote these tough sanctions. They may make them even tougher than the House voted, and they'll be over. They'll sweep through. Obama will sign them, and Iranian people will be harmed even more. This is the policy of America. You know, it's just one step short of launching a war. This is the mentality of America and the people that run it. It's an outrageous situation, and it seems to get worse. I agree with you on one more thing, Mohammed. I don't think I'll live long enough to see it, but I think U.S. power in the world absolutely is waning. Again, there are much smarter people than me who think this has been the case for many years, many, many years, and maybe one of the reasons for America launching its 9/11 attack, state-sponsored, there's no question about that, was to try to ramp up a way to regain some of the lost power. Well, it hasn't worked out that way. You know, America can destroy one country after another, but it makes more enemies than friends, and literally America and Israel are the world's two most hated countries. I think that speaks for itself.
Yes, I agree. I don't see any difference really between Republicans and Democrats when it comes to key issues. The United States, at least in foreign policy, the United States is a one-party state, as Donald Trump said once with some action, if I recall correctly. U.S. President himself, a Democrat, is someone who came to power in the name of change. He actually, this year's U.N. General Assembly, spoke of Iran's nuclear weapons program, whereas the intelligence agencies that report to him, all of them, said that there is no nuclear weapons program. So the President of the United States makes lies about Iran very easily. And he lies in such a way that people who have access the nature of those lies and how blatant those lies are. So when the United States political establishment has such people in power, then there's little hope for any really change when it comes to U.N. foreign policy and America's behavior towards other countries. With regards to the sanctions, I agree again. The United States was all for waging another dishonest war with Syria and falsely claiming that the Syrian government used chemical weapons. And it was only when they saw that the whole of the international community was opposed to war, and more importantly, the overwhelming majority of Americans were utterly against it, that they began to think twice. Because we had launched a war against Syria, that could eventually have created trouble within the United States, especially since things are becoming more difficult for the more impoverished people in the country. So, you know, when the United States behaves as such, then yes, I think that at least for the time being, there's little hope for any real change and therefore any improvement in the international order. As things stand, if the United States doesn't rethink its policy towards Iran, I think that the region will continue to head towards more difficulty, greater crisis, especially to the extremists in Syria and in Libya, that the United States and the EU have helped create, along with extremist regimes like the Saudi dictatorship. These extremists will continue to grow. They will spread across the region, and they will be a national security threat to the United States and Europe, much more so than Al-Qaeda was in the 1980s and the 1990s.
Well, of course, Al Qaeda, Mohammed, was a U.S. creation going back to the 1980s against the Soviets and their war in Afghanistan, and Osama bin Laden.
That's right.
Osama bin Laden was a CIA asset, and the notion that Obama killed him is absolutely a fantasy. Even the New York Times, back in around July 2002. And writing about the so-called killing of bin Laden, the New York Times, then 6 months after his December 2001 natural death, he was a very ill man, even the New York Times wrote about it, and there was an obituary in the, I think Fox News mentioned it before there was Fox News television, I think Fox News mentioned it as well, and there was an obituary in one of the Middle East papers, and there were people like Benazir Bhutto who knew that he died a natural death, and she went public with it on a BBC program, I think with David Frost, and I think that was one reason for her demise, but that's another story altogether. I mean, we get fed with these lies, absolute lies, Mohammed, and I don't think any more of them come out of places like America and Israel, and I spotted a quote from Israel's so-called foreign minister Avigdor Lieberman, who is a right-wing lunatic, who talks about the threat of if Iran is allowed to enrich uranium legally, my word, not his, legally, as the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty allows, not in specific language, but the implication of the wording of NPT absolutely says that, and I've quoted from it a couple of times. If Iran is allowed to do that, his word, the threat is not just directed at us. The consequences will be across the Persian Gulf, Saudi Arabia, the price of oil and gas. The consequences will be catastrophic for the whole world, quote unquote. Avigdor Lieberman, the only real threat in the Middle East, Mohammed, is Israel, nuclear armed and dangerous.
Yes, Israel is not only regime in the region that has nuclear weapons and hundreds of them. But it is also, besides Saddam Hussein, the only government that has actually used chemical weapons and weapons of mass destruction against civilians, and these are well documented. They use white phosphorus in their strikes against Lebanon as well as their strikes against Gaza. And they've also used other illegal military weapons, such as cluster bombs, on civilian targets in southern Lebanon. I visited those areas, and I've seen the regions which are still full of cluster bombs, and people are still dying when they walk into areas, for example, regularly lose sheep, and some of them die because of the weapons that the Israelis have deployed against ordinary people. So the Israeli regime, of course, most importantly, it being a Zion, a follower of the Zionist ideology, an ideology of a chosen people, which is racist in its own way, very tribalistic, and speaks of a hierarchy of humanity, which is quite disturbing, not only to see, but also more importantly to see Western countries support such a backward and inhumane ideology. But of course, Western countries, the United States, supported apartheid. And groups, ANC and Nelson Mandela, were considered terrorists by the United States. And Nelson Mandela himself, when he was president of South Africa, when he passed into the United States, he had to get special permission because he was listed as the head of a terrorist organization. So the United States has a very core record on all these fronts. But we can only hope for greater enlightenment among ordinary citizens, and hopefully in the future things will one day get better.
We certainly hope so, Mohammed. I thank you so much for coming on. I always look forward to having you on, and I look forward to having you back. One more comment about Kennedy. He deplored nuclear weapons. He wanted them all eliminated. He wanted an agreement with Soviet Russia that both sides would get rid of their nuclear weapons, not commercial nuclear power, but commercial nuclear weapons. Those are the kind of things Jack Kennedy stood for. That's what we need to think about. I need to sign off. Join us again over the weekend. 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.